Now, here's where the resistance comes in. Remember, motion causes friction. The moment you head into action, the letter E kicks in. Expect problems. As long as the train's not moving, you don't have a problem. But once the train begins to pull out of the depot, there's all kind of people. There are people sitting around the depot and say, well, I want it on the train. There are people who say, well, I want off the train. The other people say, well, I want to go this way, and you're going that way. Okay, so expect problems. So don't, now, in the expecting problems, that's, don't feel bad about it. That's part of life. In fact, in the emotional soul of a leader, one of the reasons leaders that are successful, is they have the ability to handle emotionally a myriad of problems. If you don't want to have problems, don't ever want to be a leader. If you don't want to have problems, let somebody else be a leader and let them handle all of your problems for you. Just be a follower and every morning get up and do hut 2, 3, 4, where's the line? If you're going to be a leader, I promise you, you'll increase the number of problems that you're going to have. So expect problems. And that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. It's like the kid who flunked out of school and he sent a telegram home to his mom. Flunked all my courses, been kicked out of college. Prepare prop. But you got a telegram the next day from his mother, Pop prepared. Prepare yourself. Expect problems. The letter A, always point to your successes. Always point to your successes. And the D, letter D, daily review your progress. Now I want to tell you something. I have just given you an acrostic on planning. That if you'll just make it a part of your life, laminate it. That's what you need to do. You laminate this. If you make this a part of your life, this will help you through the process of helping people through resistance and all those things. But just expect resistance because you're going to have it. Now, the second thing in handling resistance is remember the 20-50-30 rule. And the 20-30-50 rule says that 20% of the people are what I call change friendly. When you say let's change, they say let's change. 50% of the people sit on the fence. And 30% of the people are what I call resistors. Now, the next paragraph under these statistics is very key. Giving resistors your attention often just reinforces problem behavior. Try to woo the fence sitters, and attend to the 20% who drive the change. Let squeaky wheels squeak. Save your grease for the quieter wheels who are carrying the load. Don't try to get everybody on the boat. Don't try to get everybody on the train. In fact, stop for a moment. You don't want everybody on the boat. Aren't there some people, once they get in your organization, say, oh, dear Lord, what did I do? Let's move the train and let's not tell them. Okay. In handling resistance, number 3, explain the rationale for change. What happens in leading people is they, when they resist you, remember this, it's in your paragraph, resistance often is rooted in a lack of understanding. Many times people withhold support simply because they haven't figured out the situation. And education and communication is the first step of helping everybody get with the program. Number 4, provide a clear target. Resistance to change climbs fast when people can't figure out where they're headed. The more vague the destination, the fewer the volunteers that you'll find eager to go there. If the destination is vague and you got a lot of people wanting to get there, you got to check the IQ of the people that want to go. Okay. Number 5, take care of the me issues. ME, the me issues. And here's what I'm saying. The first question a person asks regarding change is, how will this affect me? I watch naive leaders. I watch them. They'll bring the vision before the people. They'll say, let me share with you my dream. Let me share with you the vision. And they're up there and they're just talking about this vision and what they want to accomplish and where they want to go, what they got. Can I tell you something? The person out there that's listening to you, they're not excited about your vision. The first thing they're asking is, if we do what he says or she says, what's going to happen to me? And they're basically going to be excited about it if in the picture they can see themselves being successful with your vision. And they're going to be very resistant to it if in the picture they see themselves not being successful with your vision. If I would have had time to teach the law of connection, the law of connection, 21 Laws book, leaders touch a heart before they ask for a hand. One of the main principles I would have taught you in the law of connection is it's the responsibility of the leader to connect with the people, not the responsibility of the people to connect with the leader. The train engine backs up to the cars don't find the engine. And it's a responsibility of the leader to connect with the people and to ask, where are they? And how do I do this? Okay, in this question, how will this affect me? This is the issue that everybody in the congregation, everybody in the business, this is the question they're asking. How is this going to affect me? So as a leader, what you do is you share how it's going to affect them. And you share with them what's positive, what's not positive. You give them the whole picture, because until you answer the question how it's going to affect them, you won't move them to the next step of the vision journey that you're wanting to take them on. Number six. We're talking about handling resistance. Seek opportunities to involve your people. And there's some good news about that. Involving your people means that others will feel important, that new ideas will surface, that everyone will be an owner of change, that people won't feel helpless and vulnerable, and the fact that people will have to struggle with the tough issues of change. That's the good news of involvement. The bad news of involvement means that progress can be slower. Because when you begin to involve them, Walt Emerson statement that if you rise early, if you travel by yourself, you can rise early. If you travel with someone else, you have to wait on them. Okay. So let me give it to you. Let me give it to you again. Good news. The good news, involvement means others will feel important. New ideas will surface. Everyone will be an owner of change. People won't feel helpless and vulnerable. And people will have to struggle with the tough issues of change. The bad news is involvement means, when you involve people, is that progress can be slower and decisions can be diluted. But you want to get people involved. That's what you want to do. Number seven. In handling resistance, this is one of my favorite points right here. Promise problems. Don't promise just solutions. One of the things that leaders have to find out is that there has to be realism in the charge that you're going to take the hill. There has to be realism. This idea of saying, gang, it's going to be an easy ride. If you get in the business, you're going to get rich. And it's just, folks, I'm telling you something, that you're going to have more fallout faster. You got to be very realistic with them. You got to help them see the whole picture. Old Paul Harvey said, "You can tell you're on the road to success. It's uphill all the way." If you don't coast to success. You don't get the vehicle and just kind of let that sucker idle and you go across the finish line. If you're coasting, you're coasting to failure, not success. So there's a realism here, and let me tell you the realism. Because the nature of change is this, that it gets worse before it gets better. Go to the bank on this. So when you're asking people to change, help them understand it's going to get worse before it gets better. Don't just say, "Hey, we're going to change, it's going to be fun, it's going to be easy." It isn't fun. It ain't going to be easy. In fact, can I tell you something? If you weren't the leader, you'd be resisting it yourself. I realized how difficult change was. In fact, the reason I talk about change a lot, the reason I'm doing it in this lesson here, is I used to be naive. I used to think that leaders liked to change and followers didn't. Then one day I realized, no, leaders don't like to change either. They only like to change if they're in charge. But I realized how hard it was to change this because when I was a kid, when I graduated from high school, my parents got me a set of golf clubs for my graduation present, of which I didn't know how to play golf. But because I was an athlete and was very stupid, I decided that I would teach myself. So I went out to the golf course and I had a baseball swing and I hit the ball and I didn't have a slice, I had a boomerang. I mean, I could hit the ball and it almost could come all the way back to me. In fact, one day I was playing golf with a good golfer and I started getting humbled because he was hitting the ball straight and I'd never seen the ball go straight before. I didn't realize the ball could go straight. If I wanted to hit the ball there, I lined up here and let it do that number. You know. And so I finally humbled myself enough. I said, "Can you tell me what's wrong with my golf game?" I said, "Well," I said, "I don't have time for that." He said, "Everything." And I said, "It can't be that bad. You don't mean everything." He said, "Well," he says, "everything I see." He said, "I've been watching you." He said, "You do nothing right." He said, "You don't have one thing. I mean, you don't, you know, in other words, you're in deep weeds." So then I thought, well, I can't learn everything. Come on. I mean, we got to do it one. So I said, "Let's start with the basics." I said, "What's my number one problem in golf?" And he looked at me and said, "Well," he said, "Your number one problem is you're too close to the ball after you hit it." I perfected mini shots. I could swing a golf club hard and have the ball go this far. You try that. Swing with all your might and only hit it this far. You have to be good to do that. Well, you know what he did? He changed everything. Changed the way I gripped the clubs, changed the way I stood, changed all of my footwork, he changed my swing, he changed it all. Now, here's what I found in that process. I mean, I found it's very difficult to unlearn. I found out that it's much easier to learn it right than to learn it wrong, unlearn it, and learn it right. It's one of the lessons I learned there is the value of when you get people early, train them quick. There are all kinds of things I learned because I used to go to the practice range with my bad swing and practice. Can I tell you something? When you go practice something wrong, you know, you hear people say practice makes perfect. It always ticks me off when I hear that. Can I tell you, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. Put it this way. If you're bad and you practice, you just get more consistently bad. You've got to learn how to do it right if you're going to practice and get out of the hole. And you know what I found in this whole area of change? I found that when I was getting ready to make what I would call a crucial shot, maybe I'm 100 yards out and I really need to make this shot to get on the green so I can have a chance to par, I found that I had a tendency to go back to my old way of swinging the club because it made me feel more comfortable. That's why when people say, "Well, you want to feel comfortable in what you're doing," I'm saying, "No, you don't." Some of the most important things I've ever done, I felt uncomfortable doing. You want to do it right, not comfortable. That's when I realized that many people would rather have old problems than new solutions. It's when I realized that not everybody wants to change. They would rather be comfortable than change. There's an uneasiness and an uncomfortableness in the process. And that's what we're talking about when I'm talking about resistance. This is what you and I have to deal with. When we are going to be overcomers, we're going to go up against a lot of resistance, a lot of people who maybe do not want to change, which brings me to number 8 in helping people in this area. Number 8 is, I call this, over-communicate. All I'm saying here is you cannot communicate enough when people are going through change. And no matter how well you understand all the reasons why, you need to keep repeating them over and over again. Here's why. In your notes, when people question the change, remind them with logic. When people complain about the change, show them the benefits. When people begin to lose heart, offer words of encouragement. And I talk in this last paragraph about making communication a two-way street. When I was pastor at Skyline, when we went through rapid growth, I knew the growth was a much faster curve than a lot of people in my congregation could handle. We were changing service times all the time, adding services, adding staff. And I mean, we went into about a 6-year period of change where we were growing by thousands. And I realized that people were having just some internal issues of groping with the fact that this isn't the way the church has been for the last 25 years. In fact, somebody asked me one time, they said, after I'd been there for about 2 years and we were on this rapid growth, they said, "How are you adjusting?" I said, "Well, I'm doing fine. I've always lived with myself." I said, "The people I feel sorry for are the people out there. Because all of a sudden, they're having to deal with this person who has more ideas, wakes up in the middle of the night with ideas and just creates and thinks and has high energy and wears everybody out." And one of the best things I did is I knew